Everyone, and welcome back to this week's edition of Insights into the Weekly Parsha, Parshas Emor. Would like to begin by thanking our generous sponsor, our learning this morning, Ubilezecha Nishmas, Anshel Yitzchak ben Yehudit ve Aharon. Thank you so much for your generosity. This learning should be a merit for his neshama, and it should be a schus for the entire family. Thank you, everybody who's joining us live, and thank you, everybody who's joining us via Facebook Live and in the Boca Jewish Center Zoom room. Excited to be together, getting ready for Shabbos. So we have a very important lesson to learn together, to be uplifted and to be inspired. The lessons of Parshas Emor, for us to understand, to appreciate how to apply the Torah lessons in our lives. So let's begin with some of where we could understand on a little bit of a deeper level. So we know that amidst the Torah's discussion of the festivals in Parshas Emor, we know the litany and the description, for example, of all of the holidays. You know, sometimes people like in Parshas Emor to say Good Yontif, because after all, you talk about Pesach and Shavuos and Sukkot and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Sefirot HaOmer. It's all here in Parshas Emor. So in the middle of this whole discussion in Parshas Emor, it introduces a number of mitzvos. Also, at the end of that whole discussion, also, the mitzvot relevant to the harvest season. And we know that we find ourselves in the days between Pesach and Shavuos, and we're counting, we're remembering in the springtime and the harvest season and how much that's relevant to the Yom Tov of Shavuos. And it commands offering the first portion, like the Bikurim, the first that is given to the Kohanim of newly harvested barley specifically. In the early spring is part of the special sacrifice, the Korban HaOmer, that's brought on the second day of Pesach. Perek Chaf Gimel, chapter 23, verses 10 through 13, the Pasuk tells us, Daber el b'nei Yisrael v'yamart aleihem ki sovu el haaretz, when you will come into the land of Israel, asher nino sein lochem, the land that I will give you, tzartem es kitzira v'veisem es oimer reishis kitzirchem el hakoin. You should speak to the b'nei Yisrael and tell them that you will reap its harvest, you will bring it to the Kohen and Omer at the beginning of your reaping season. Of course, this is part of the mitzvah of Matnas Kahuna, the gifts to the Kohen, those obligations that we have to provide all of that which we are supposed to do. V'heini ves ha'omer lifnei Hashem l'rtzoinchem imachras ha'shabbos yinifenu ha'kohen. And of course, we know what we do, the function, the mechanics of how it goes. We wave it. We wave the Omer before Hashem so that it will be acceptable to you. The Kohen shall wave it also on the day after the rest day specifically Mimachras HaShabbos is not talking about Sunday, but it's talking about the day after Pesach. And that begins the process, of course, of these many days of Sefirot HaOmer and counting and preparing and the barley and the significance of that, what that means. And then we understand in this whole portion here, it requires us also to understand what we call the Lechem Hapana, or the Shtei Lechem, the two loaves of bread made from newly harvested wheat. That was 7 weeks later that was going to be brought. Also, Perek Chaf Gimel, chapter 23, verses 16 through 21, where we are taught, An Mimachras HaShabbos HaShavi Tisbru Chamishim Yom. That sounds familiar. Of course, we say, Shem Yichud Kutshubrichel every single night by Sfiras HaOmer. So we understand that we're counting and we are remembering the harvest and the barley and the 7 weeks that we count, Chamishim Yom, counting up and leading up to Shavuos. V'kravta Mincha Chadosh Al Hashem. And that which you bring is a new meal offering to Hashem. And we know from your dwellings, Taviyu Lechem Tenufa Shteim, it should be Shtayim Shnei Esronim, it should be from your bread. You set aside specifically the Shtei Lechem, the two loaves of bread. It's made from Solestiana Chometz, Teafena Bikurim LaHashem, the fine flour and the Eifa, and you bake it, all of the particulars and the nuances. For any Kohanim that are listening in, this is something that's very exciting. And for the others, we're excited to be able to participate in these mitzvot Hashem. Good. So here's what's fascinating, is that this whole section, actually, this chapter 23, Chav Gimel, it concludes this section by saying something that's a repeat. Now, anytime the Torah repeats something, tells us something that we already learned, we have to understand, like, why in the world is the Torah doing that? After all, once the Torah tells us, there's nothing that's superfluous, there's nothing that's unnecessary, there's not something that's, you know, needed to be explained again. Chazara, the review, of course, as we're learning in our Orchos Tzadikim and our daily Hashkafa Jams, the need to do Chazara, to review. When you learn Torah, you have to review it. If a person does not learn Torah and review it, so then the reality of a person's ability to remember it, it's lost. You're going to forget it. We know that. That's very different, says the author of the Orchos Tzadikim. That's very different than a person, for example, who studies any type of secular Western discipline. When a person studies a Western secular discipline, all right, so you're a mathematician, you're a scientist, you know, medicine, right? And you learn that trade. So once you learn it, like you learn it, you want to review, you want to update yourself, you want to renew your license. Okay, that's fine. But the reality is, you know your trade. You know what you're supposed to do. Torah, you learn Torah. If you don't remember the Torah, if you don't review, if you don't do chazara, so the Torah is lost. It's complete shichacha. Now, why that's so? So the commentaries teach us that there's a gift called forgetfulness. The shichacha, that's forgetfulness, that's a gift. Why is that a gift and how is that a gift? The way and the how that that's a gift is that imagine a person learned Torah and remembered everything, and then you were done. So then you'd have all this free time on your hand, and you'd have time to do averas. Part of the reason why there's shichacha, there's forgetfulness, is because at the end of the day, if you need to review it, so you're busy constantly. There's never a time that you've mastered it. And even though you've been through Parshas Emor, how many times have we learned Parshas Emor in your life? Okay, so we learned Parshas Emor, we learned Maseches Kedushin, we are obligated to review to chazer the Torah that we learn. Why? Because if we have too much free time, then we're going to do averus, we're going to sin. So it's an amazing thing. So anytime the Torah reviews something in and of itself, by itself, of course, we know, so there's a value. But when the Torah repeats something that it taught us already, the review is the necessity of what we're to do when it's taught once. We don't have to understand it to be taught multiple times. And even the fact that Sefer Devarim, Mishneh Torah, even though it seems to recapitulate everything that was said previously, it's said differently. And there's a reason why and an explanation as to the nuances, which we'll get to when we get to Sefer Devarim. But here we have in our Parsha a similar circumstance where there's a law that we learned in Parsha's Kedoshim a few weeks ago, right? Where we understood the Parsha that we learned in Achrei Mos Kedoshim last week. We, and of course, we understand the Sefer Parsha and all of the dinim and the laws. So if we understand in chapter 19 of what we learned in Parsha's Kedoshim, that there's a law that we learned. So why is it necessary for us to relearn this law now? So what is this law that we're relearning? What's this idea where the Torah concludes this section? So it concludes by saying, V'kutzrichem es kitzir artzichem, lo sichale pas asodcha, v'leket kitzircha l'salokid, le'oni v'leget tasav ozom, ani Hashem l'kechem. What does that mean? The Pasuk tells us that when you reap your harvest, which we've been talking about, when you reap your harvest in your land, so what you should do is you cannot completely remove the corner of your field during your harvesting. You shall not gather up all the gleanings of your harvest. It's not all yours. It's not your whole thing. You got to do something. It's a mitzvah in the Torah, right? Peah, leket, shechacha. You have to leave some of your field. You have to leave this over for the poor person and for the stranger, I'm Hashem. So the ger, the convert, the stranger, the person. Why? Because you or yourselves are convert, you yourself are a ger. You can understand and appreciate the necessity and sensitivity of that, number one. But number two, you have to understand this also for the ani. This is the poor person. We have an obligation to take care of the ani, of the poor person. And how that happens is you have your field, and when you're going to bring your harvest, and when you're going to come to Eretz Yisrael, and when you're going to bring a gift to the Kohen, and you're going to come to the Beis HaMikdash. You have to remember, you're not bringing the whole thing. You got to leave a little section of your field. It's reminiscent of, you know, everybody, when you build a new house, Bana Bayis Chadash, so there's a custom for us to remember the Beis HaMikdash by leaving a section. If you go to houses in Eretz Yisrael, more so here than in the diaspora, but you go to a home that's newly built in Yerushalayim in Eretz Yisrael, there's a section, Zeicha L'Chorban. It's unfinished. It's not painted. It's left to be unfinished. Why? Because we don't want to have anything completely full. And even though it's a little bit of a different idea, it's similar, the different idea. But the idea of where you have to remember something else, here in that case, it's the Beis HaMikdash. In our case, of our parsha, you have to remember the Oni, you have to remember the Ger, you have to remember that there's an obligation that's beyond yourself. You have something, but it has to be something that's given to you. Good. So the question, of course, is why does the Torah reiterate something that we previously learned? We learned in Parshas Kedoshim, Perek 9, chapter 19, Pasuk number 9, Yud Tes Tes, to leave certain portions of a person's agricultural fields to the poor. We already learned that. One corner of the field and the gleanings that drop during the harvest. So it's not just that you have to leave it. That's also part of it. But also the gleanings that you're gleaning the field, you've dropped something, so you don't go back and pick it up. So there's the field portion of the field that you have to leave over. That's one part. But another part, of course, is the gleanings. Let's just say you drop it, and you're taking a big bundle. You ever have your kids? They take a big bundle. So they drop a couple things on the floor. Concept in the Gemara, tefasta maruba lo tefasta, which means if you take too much, you take nothing. So you take a lot of things, you drop it on the floor, and now you want to go back and pick it up because it's my things. Imagine you're holding a bundle of cash, hundreds, Benjamin Franklin's, and you drop it on the floor. I'm going back to get that. I'm not letting that remain on the floor. And the halacha is that you have to let it remain on the floor. Why? You dropped it. So it's min ha-shamayim. That's how it's supposed to be. You have to take care of the poor. So once we're reiterating a law, a din, a concept, a mitzvah that was already mentioned in Parshas Kedoshim four chapters earlier. So I need to understand what in the world, why is that so? What does it say? It says that also, it says exactly the same thing, kimat, just about as we're saying here in our parsha. And Rashi explains, which means you have to leave a corner of your field at the edge of your field unharvested. So it's the gleanings, it's the droppings, and it's the field that you're going to leave unharvested that's going to be not completely reaped because you have to leave it over. There's a sensitivity. Got it. So the question is, why? Like, what's this all about? Why does the Torah here in our parsha, in Parsha Zemor, repeat yet again something that we already learned? And why is this so important? So listen to this unbelievable Rashi. This might be the most important Rashi of this parsha. Who am I to say that? But it's definitely an incredibly inspirational one. It's one that needs explanation, but it's very, very powerful. So the Rashi in our parsha on this pasuk, on this verse, that says that we have this obligation to leave the gleanings to be sensitive and kind to the poor. Listen to what Rashi says. So Rashi bases comments on the Torah's Kohanim, and he gives us an explanation, a teretz, an understanding why these mandatory gifts to the poor are reiterated here in a very specific context. What's the context for which these obligations are mentioned? The context, of course, is the context of the Moadim, of the festivals, of the holidays, and the special sacrifices that are offered on these occasions. It's not just that we learn, it's Pesach, it's Shavuos, it's Sukkot, it's Rosh Hashanah, it's Yom Kippur. What do we learn in the Parsha and more? We learn that there's specific obligations of karbanos, of offerings that have to bring to the Beis HaMikdash. They have to bring this type of harvest and this type of barley, and you have to bring this type of animal and this type of sacrifice. Because when the Beis HaMikdash stood and when the Beis HaMikdash will stand, so we're going to be very busy bringing karbanos. They're very specific obligations. For example, Shabbos, you know, people think that Musaf, what's Musaf? Musaf is Shmona Esrei after the Kriyas HaTorah, right after the rabbi's sermon, right after the drasha. But the Shabbos, the Karban Musaf, it was the Karban, it was the offering, it was the Musaf offering that was offered in the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos and on Yantiv. So all of the festivals have associated offerings and karbanos that are associated with the specific holiday. So if that's true, and in the context of these mo'adim, of these festivals, the special sacrifices that are associated with these occasions, so what's the reason why there's an explanation necessary for us to understand? Why is it that the obligation to be sensitive to the poor, the obligation to leave over your field, the mandatory gifts that are given to the aniyim, why is it mentioned here? You did it already in last week's parsha. Why is it in the context? And sometimes it's very important. Not only when we learn Torah, we have to understand the laws, we have to also understand the context for which these laws are taught to us. So let's understand. This is unbelievable. Rashi says it's so powerful. Ready? This is what Rashi says. Amar Rabbi Avdimas. Rabbi Avdimas says, Rabbi Yosef, the name of Rabbi Yosef, Mara'o ha-kosov litna be'emtza ha-regolim. What is it that the Torah saw? This is the question. Sounds like it's my question. It's not my question. It's Rashi's question. What is it that the Torah saw to write be'emtza ha-regolim, in the middle of teaching the laws of the regolim? Pesach, v'atzeres, mikan, v'Rosh Hashanah, v'yom ha-kippurim, v'chag, mikan. One hand you have Rosh Hashanah, v'yom kippur. On the other hand you have Pesach, v'atzeres, and you have Passover, and you have Shavuos. Like, it's right in the middle. So Rashi says to teach us the following, to tell us, Shekol hanoisein leket, shichcha, upeya, le'oni, karoi. Fasten your seatbelts, this is unbelievable. That anybody who gives and leaves of their field, the leket, the shichcha, the peya, and gives to the oni, to the poor person, as they should, as per the command of the Torah, as our obligation is, such a person who does that, Malin alav akosuv ki'ilu bona beis hamikdash v'hikriv karbonosav b'seicho. Wow! Blow away. Eish lovin, it is fire. It is brilliance. What does that mean? It's as if for such a person to do this, such a person to be scrupulous in the performance of this mitzvah of matnas ani, and to give to the gifts of the poor, it's as if what the Torah is saying, it's ki'ilu, it's as if you built the beis hamikdash. You have built the holy temple, v'hikriv karbonosav b'seicho, and you've offered sacrifices inside the Beis HaMikdash. So you want to know the relationship? Here you have the festivals. Here are the festivals' offerings. And if you give, the juxtaposition of these two ideas is that if you're going to give properly to the gifts of the poor person, you've built the Beis HaMikdash. Not only have you built the Beis HaMikdash, you brought karbonos. You brought offerings in the Beis HaMikdash. It's such a powerful Rashi. We have to dissect it a little bit. But what comes to mind also is the Gemara Maseches Tainis. That tells us, you know, we're yearning for the temple to be rebuilt. We want to be able to bring offerings. You know, so many synagogues, unfortunately and unexplained, they skip the karbonot, they skip karbonos in the morning. Why is it unfortunate? Why is it unexplained? Because the Gemara tells us that the amira, the stating, the saying, the reading of the offerings that we read in our morning services, it's ke'ilu, it's as if he craved them. It's as if you've actually offered them. It's as if you've brought them in the Beis HaMikdash. So that means it's not even that you have to go there. It's not even have to do it. You just have to say it. You have to say it with kavana. We should be zochet to have a Beis HaMikdash. We're yearning for the Beis HaMikdash. We want to bring it actually. But part of our agmas nefesh and not having a Beis HaMikdash is reflected in our saying it with the belief that our saying it is as if it's a hakrava, as if it's an offering. And as an offering, what it does, it allows us to do, to be connected to the Beis HaMikdash. Imagine that. So how could a person possibly ever skip karbonos? When you realize that it's as if you're bringing a karbon in the Beis HaMikdash. Bisman shem Beis HaMikdash enu kayam, in the time in which we live, unfortunately, with the Beis HaMikdash, which is not rebuilt, we have the ability to bring, quote, bring karbonos every single day when we say the karbonos. How you could skip that, I have no idea. And Baruch Hashem and Arshu, we don't. Baruch Hashem, we don't. But here you have in a similar fashion. You want to know how to connect to the Beis HaMikdash. You want to have your yad, your yadayim, your hands, as those that are affiliated, associated with the building of the Beis HaMikdash. So you have to give properly, leket, shechecha, peya, le'oni, kiroi. You have to give it to the poor person as you're obligated to do it. You have to understand what this means. It's very powerful, because if you think about it, it's a very powerful statement. But it's not yet clear what the relationship is. Like, why is it? What is unique about these particular mitzvos, the charitable gifts left to the poor from one's field and one's orchards, that they're equated to the sacrifice of the Beis HaMikdash? It's a nice idea, but why is that so? What's the connection? What's the link? Why is that so? Right? It sounds like if we didn't get into it any further, it's like a nice thought. Here, if you're generous and if you're kind to a poor person, you'll build a Beis HaMikdash. You could say that about all mitzvos. If you put your tefillin on with a lot of robust, with kavana, if you invite guests for Shabbos, if you, are careful with Shmiras HaLoshen, so you'll be zeichet to build the Beis HaMikdash. And by the way, that all might be true. But Rashi points out specifically that it's this particular link, being charitable by leaving gifts to the poor and your orchard from your fields, that are equated with the sacrifices, and you have a yad in being bind to the Beis HaMikdash, building the Holy Temple. It's unbelievable. So the question is why and what is the explanation of this link. Okay, so far so good. So I just want to share with you an unbelievable explanation that was shared in the Likutei Sichos of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And you can find it in the Biurei HaChumash, in the writings of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And in the course of that explanation, it's a lengthier discussion that analyzes the difference between Rashi's comments and their source in Torah's Kahanim. It goes through like the meat and potatoes a little bit more so. But listen to this. This is what he says. He explains that if you look at Rashi's very next remarks, see, it's very important. You know, sometimes in life, you know, we look, it's what they call like the keyhole mentality. What's the keyhole mentality? The keyhole mentality is, imagine you're looking through a keyhole. Would you conclude that everything in that room is what you see in that little keyhole? So if you're a fool, then you'll say, yeah, sure, that's what I see. After all, what else could there possibly be? But you're simply looking through one very small, minuscule, minute part of what's there. The second you open that door, you're like, oh my goodness, I didn't see that on the peripheral. I didn't see this and I didn't see that. Would you best bet your last dollar that what you see in that keyhole is everything that's there? Of course not. Unless you're a tipish, unless you're foolish. If you're a chacham, if you're wise, you know that there's way more. So same thing is true in life. You know, we tend to look at things. You know, when my mother would say to me, I have eyes in the back of my head, when I started finding myself saying that to my own children, we realized that the Ribbono Shel Olam's eyes, right, are in the back of his head, kaviyachol, they see everything, all places, all times, without pause, right? And the idea is that we realize that this is an essential concept, to realize that it links, it's threaded, there's all things on us all the time. So if you think that there's one thing related to another, it is. What is that link? So the Lubavitcher Rebbe says that there's a longer conversation. What's the next point? Which means the idea is you have to understand the big picture. If you just look at it in a very small, in an immediate vacuum, you're not going to understand the whole thing. You have to understand the text, you have to understand the context, and you have to understand the whole Rashi. I picked out a little section, a little statement from Rashi, but it's actually a bigger Rashi. There's actually more Rashi. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe says, now look at the next part of Rashi, and then you'll understand what this link is. What's this link? So he says the following. That, what does Rashi say? That the Torah does not command a person to give these portions to the aniyim of the field to the poor people. But rather, what does the Pasuk say? Ta'azov osam. What does ta'azov? What do the Israelis say? What is, if you, somebody's bothered, would say? Ta'azov oti bakasha. What does ta'azov oti mean? What does that mean? It means leave me alone. So good. So what does the Pasuk say? Is ta'azov, don't give it to them. Leave it for them. By the way, in the world of charity, it's a very big difference. If I leave a gift card at somebody's door and they have no idea who it's from, or I leave it in an open field for people to take from, which we're going to get to why that's and how that's so significant, it's very different than me giving it to somebody. Because when I give it to somebody, you have to remember, when you give charity to an organization, which we're going to get to in a minute, so there's a level of, sure, it's genuine, it's benevolent, it's kind, it's chesed. But sometimes what happens in the back of your mind, so, okay, like there's a little bit of kavod that's associated with it. There's a return favor that you're expecting to get. Okay, like maybe there's going to be a dinner that's coming up soon, and maybe you're going to remember that I gave you this charitable donation. There's a little bit of somebody a couple years ago confessed to me. I saw that they're very, very generous to one of the hospitals, you know, in the New York metropolitan area. I saw their names like all over everywhere. So I said, wow, he's very generous. And they said, they never know when they're going to need the hospital. It's a good idea. It's like a good insurance policy. So I'm not saying that's bad. I'm not saying that that's not a good toelis and a good, you know, a good insurance that they should take. But the reality is they realize that here, you want it, one day they're going to need a hospital and they don't want to have to wait in line. They don't have to call the, so you know what, let me do it. We'll dedicate this wing of the hospital. And when Blankowitz calls the, at that time, they say, oh, Mr. and Mrs. Blankowitz, let's get the top, you know, surgeon necessary, the doctor that's critical care. So what have you. So there's a level of it. So the difference between the leaving of it and the handing of it. So Rashi says, look, the command is not that you give it to the aniyim. The command is that you tazov osam, that you leave it for him. The meaning that a person doesn't give to a specific, what does that imply? That implies two things. Number one is, if you understand the levels of charity of the Rambam, we'll understand that there's something that when you're discreet, so there's a higher level of giving, right? I leave it. So I don't want to see you, and I don't want you to see me. I don't want you necessarily to know that it's me. That's one level. But that's what we're going to understand from what Rashi's implication is that a person does not give to any particular individual, right? It's not just Aleph. Number one is that there's an individual person I want to give charity to. There's an organization I want to give charity to. But I don't want them to see me. I don't want to have that exchange. A, because I don't want them to feel embarrassed or different. And B, because I don't want the nisayon of feeling like because I've given you something, remember me, right? Leave that. That's a level to talk about. That's if I know you. But I think what we understand here from this Rashi and this command is tazov osam means that you're not giving it to any particular needy person. You're leaving it out there. It's out on the field. So that's what Rashi says. So hanach lifnehem vehem yilkitu. You know what happens? Is you leave it before them and let them come take it. Who's the them? I don't know who the them is. I just have to leave my gleanings. I have to leave a part of my field. And if they come, and that means ve'ein lechal sayeya le'echad mehem, you're not to help one of them since this will deprive others. That's the Gemara, that's the Taras Kahanim is quoted in Rashi. Meaning, I'm not choosing you or you or you or you. If I choose you or you or you or you, what that means, it excludes other people. So I just leave it out there. If anybody wants to take it, I have extra food that I have from Shabbos. I like put it out there. Anybody wants it, gesunte, hey, take it, enjoy, te'anu. Once I'm choosing people, that means I'm choosing one to the exclusion of somebody else. That's not what it is. So we can understand that this is very important to understand this connection, because he has to passively allow every needy person equal access. Everybody has to have an opportunity to be able to get the produce, to be able to have the leftovers, to be able to have what's part of his property. He can't give any particular person help that he decides to wish that you help on. So I have a cousin, I have a friend, we have a connection, I have this relationship. None of that doesn't exist. It's out there. And by the way, who's a possible person to whom that person can take from your field? Who's a possible suggested individual? Right? Somebody who you don't like. Maybe somebody I don't like. So you know what the Torah says? Tough noogies. Too bad. I'm not interested in who you like. I'm not interested in who your relationships are. I'm not interested in you helping any specific person. By the way, helping a specific person is givaldic. You have to. We do. But here's what it is. the giving is without any particular person in mind. You have to leave it out there for everybody. So this provision, says the Lubavitch Rebbe, who was one of the greatest Ohevei Yisrael ever, right? Lover of Jews and lover of Jews' connection to mitzvot. He says that this lends these mitzvot a unique quality that's not shared by other forms of charity. Now, is there an ideal form on how a person should give charity tzedakah? The Rambam says, of course, 100%. He says there's something that's unique about the quality of this type of giving that's unique to all other types of giving. That doesn't mean when the pushka goes around the shul and you look and you put a quarter, a dollar in, do you think that maybe somebody's looking and somebody's watching? Is there some fact of it being a public giving that affects it? Maybe, I don't know. Maybe it's a positive thing. Because if I see that you're giving a dollar, I'm going to also feel like I'm not going to give a dollar. If he's giving a dollar, I got to give a dollar. And like this, you're mezaking the people to be able to participate in this. It's fine. But there's something that's very special. Listen to this. And this is what we've started to and alluded to, but here's what we can hammer it down. Now, when a person, he explains, is entitled to choose normally. Obviously, you can choose whatever charity you want to give to Hatzalah, you want to give to JNF, you want to give to the Boca Jewish Center, you want to give to another synagogue up north that you're close to, whatever you want to give to. A person can choose whatever they want. And when you make your charitable donation, it is what it is. And in this way, you know what happens? You think everybody benefits on some degree of hanoah from the charity that you give, right? Unless you're giving it anonymously, you're sending a check to whatever organization. You're going to benefit from that also, klapei shemaya, right, from God. But at the end of the day, when you send a check and you send to the organization and they know who you are and you know who they are, okay, so they're going to give you an honorable seat at the dinner and they're going to give you VIP tickets to a concert. They're going to honor you however they honor you. They'll send you flowers for Shabbos. I was in the flower shop pre-corona. It was probably like 2 years ago. Not that I wait so often, so infrequently to go to the flower shop. But it was on one particular occasion. I was in the flower shop and there was another person who was there with two sides, the Field of Flowers flower shop here in Boca Raton. There's two sides of there's two checkout areas. And I saw a fellow that I know very well from town. And he had flowers, like I tell you, could barely see the guy. So I said, everything all right? Like, that's a lot of flowers. So he said, yeah. He was working for one of the yeshivas locally, and he says a family just gave a very big donation to the yeshiva, and he felt that he has to give them, some flowers, something to chavit shabbos. It's a beautiful thing, hakar satov, and the family deserves it. But there's a level of, when somebody gives something, you're connected to that person or to that organization in a different way. And maybe that different way sometimes, clouds, distorts the ultimate reward, this authenticity. What am I going to gain? If I'm giving you something, I want to know nothing. Like, just take it. It's all, it's altruistic and true. So you have to understand that you can benefit from some level, some shape or form from charity, and that's fine. It's okay. I'm talking about the highest form. We're talking the think tank here. The person has the freedom to choose and assist people with who they want, who they desire to befriend, who happen to be like, whose admiration and gratitude he seeks to earn. Like, you could do that. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying that that's the best, but it's definitely not. There's nothing wrong with it. Now, when it comes to the portions of the field that's left for the poor, obviously we see that there's no such benefit. There's no relationships. There's no relationships for you to that person. There's no relationship for you in return. If you say, you remember that time that I helped you out, you're in a really difficult situation, that doesn't exist because you have no idea who that person is. The owner is required to allow, we see there's no such matter as the owner is required to allow any needy person to come along and help himself to the produce. It's an open buffet. And this is a unique quality to these gifts that sets them apart. These gifts, apart from other forms of charity, which makes this set of laws very significant. Now listen to how we hammer this in, and then I'll share with you an unbelievable Rabbi Jonathan Sachs and another brilliant idea, and we'll end this learning together. But this is unbelievable. What the Lubavitch Rebbe explains is this might explain why Rashi equates this mitzvah with the privilege of building the Beis HaMikdash. Like, what's this connection? That's unbelievable. Your hands, you're the builder of the Beis HaMikdash? Because building the Beis HaMikdash is a service that one provides for the entire nation. It's for everybody. It's not for a particular person. It's not for a particular group. It's not one faction. It's not one clique within our nation. What is it? We're facilitating the service of God by everybody, not by a specific segment of the population. And herein lies the point of comparison between the Beis HaMikdash and the mandatory charitable portions of agricultural fields, which is awesome. Both of them, both signify the great tzichus, the great merit of assisting all of Klal Yisrael equally. The Beis HaMikdash is not for the rich. It's not for the poor. It's not for the hoity-toities. It's not for the Ashkenazim. It's not for the Sfardim. It's not for the Litvaks. It's not for the Chassidim. It's not for the... It's for everybody. It's for every single person. So since both of these ideas signify that it's open to anybody, it's without direct affiliation, it's open to everybody. So you have to understand that without singling out or showing preference to any particular type of person or group or clique or orientation, you know who the Beis HaMikdash is for? It's for everyone. You know who the Peah Leket Shichot is for? It's for anyone. Now, obviously, the specific subcategory group is the Aniyim. It's not for any person like in the world, but it describes the attitude that we're supposed to have for Aniyim and any Ani. It's not one specific thing. It's for everybody. It's a very powerful idea he shares. And they express the value and the importance of not only extending oneself to help other people, but extending oneself to help anybody. It's not one type. It's not interacting with one group. This is my group. This is my clique. This is my orientation. I'm Ashkenazi. I'm Sephardi. I'm Litvak. I'm a Chassid. I'm this. I'm that. I'm tall. I'm short. I'm rich. I'm poor. It doesn't matter what you are. At the end of the day, like, who does the Beis HaMikdash belong to? Because the Baruch Hu wants us to have a Beis HaMikdash for us to be able to be close to him. Doesn't look and say, excuse me, give me your profile, and then I'll let you know if the Beis HaMikdash is for you. Your profile is your Yehudi. You have an Neshama Tahira. You're a Gevalt. You're a child of the Ribono Shel Olam. Period. Hard stop. Why we have to act any differently in the world of our social groups, in the world of our interactions with anybody or anything, I have no idea. We're just, it's sometimes a function of our greatest weakness because we're only able to relate to the parts of ourselves that we like the most about ourselves. And so therefore we interact with that group. So we understand it's not only extending oneself to help other people, but it's extending oneself to help anybody, including people that you may not like. People who are outside of your familiar socioeconomic circles. You know, a person who holds different opinions and views considerably different from your own. And this is the level of kindness and generosity to which we should strive. The level where we are driven and motivated to offer assistance to all our fellow Jews and needs, regardless of where they are. And this is how you build the Beis HaMikdash. Does it matter? Is there a difference? Sure. Is there an orientation distinction? Of course. But just like this charity, just like this generosity, just like this benevolence, just like this kindness, in the world of giving, there has to be kindness and generosity in the world of building. And that's how you build the Beis HaMikdash. I think Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, said it beautifully when he explained in the world of Achdus, the world of Jews coming together and people understanding this form, he said, and I quote, "The beauty of creation as we believe and as science ever more wondrously shows is that unity above creates diversity below." That's unbelievable. And the more complex the life form, the greater the diversity. The Rambam in the Moreh Nevuchim explains that though diversity applies to all life forms, it applies more to humans than to any other. The diversity is extraordinary. You walk into one room, this guy has this complexion, that person has another eye color, another person has a different color hair, some people don't have hair, some people are tall, some people are stocky, some people are, you have a man, you have a woman, you have like a whole litany of different things to which a person must surely add among Jews more than most, right? You have the world, humanity distinctions, and Jews. Oh, goodness gracious. We have another subcategory. Oh, you're human. Oh, you're man. Oh, you're woman. Oh, you're Jewish. Oh, what kind of Jew are you? You're this type of Jew. You're that type of Jew. We have like so many different buckets. Like how many people are in your bucket? So no small people is more diverse ethnically, culturally, right? Religiously, right? The more religious, the more diverse. There was hardly a Jewish settlement in the Middle Ages, Rabbi Sachs says, without its own minhagim and piyutim. In the 18th and 19th century, he writes, each Hasidic group and yeshiva had its own style, its own nigunim, its own derech halim, and its own role models, its own spiritual tonality. The way of ger was not the way of chabad, the way of velosha was not the way of mir. Everybody had its own form. Everybody had its own distinction. Diversity, says, though, is a sign of strength. It is not a sign of weakness. See, so many times we look at people's differences and we see ourselves as weak. Look, why can't we be the same? You're on the same team. You wear the same uniform. Why can't we play the same? And the answer is that would be awful. Maybe it would be that if we were all the exact same, we would never be able to be so successful. So he explains, the author of the Aruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein, he said in the Hagdam, in the introduction to the Aruch HaShulchan and Choshen Mishpat, in the very last of the 613 commandments, the mitzvah of Ksiva Sefer Torah, the writing of a Sefer Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't use the word Torah, right? Kisvu, what does it mean to write? Doesn't say kisvu es haTorah. What does he say? He uses the word that describes Torah is shira. The Torah is used in describing a Torah, it's the word Shira. It doesn't use the word Torah, but rather Shira, because this respective Torah is like music, is the greatest beauty which lies in the complex harmonies that are existent when you have lots of different instruments that come together to make this music. Imagine you went to a concert and we're gonna hear only horn instruments, just the trumpet, just the trombone. Like, you're gonna pay money for that? What makes it a symphony of extraordinary and exquisite success is you have the wind instruments, you have the horn instruments, you have, right, all the different instruments that come together, because that's why the Torah is called Ashira, because it's in the complex harmonies, or as the Netziv writes in his commentary, that Migdal Bovel, uniformity of thought, is not a sign of freedom, but the opposite. It's a sign of shibud. It's not the same. When you have everybody who's able to come together with their differences but still play music together, that's unbelievable. You're wearing the same uniform, but you have different roles. One's a scorer, one's a passer. One rebounds, one cheers on the bench. I don't know. Everybody has their role. Everybody has their place. One's a Kohen, one's a Levi. One's a Yisrael, one's a man. One's a woman, one's a child. One is, everybody has a different role. And there's nothing wrong with that. Adrabba, that is something that's extraordinary. And when we learn how to come together and we realize that we are the needed way, that we are mandated to understand that when we appreciate that it's all, and it's all for one and one for all, and we realize that we have the greatest gift in our hands in the world of building the Beis HaMikdash. We're not going to sit back and wait for the Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt. And I'm just saying, oh, now it's time to move to Yerushalayim. I have to actively engage in building the Beis HaMikdash. And one of the ways I could do that is to learn this lesson of Leket, Shichla, and Peah, to understand that the same way that I'm obligated a person to give to the poor in an open, generous, nondescript way, is the same way of ahavas chinam, a certain sense of baseless, you know, giving of love to others without rhyme and without reason. It's all for one and one for all. Just to end by sharing with you an unbelievable story that I came across in preparing this talk here, is to think about like where we can be and how it can go. So there was a group of people that were hiking in the fall of 2008. So there was a member of Temple Beth Jacob. It's a Reform synagogue in Newburgh, New York. And they're on a hike. And they discovered a number of headstones that had Hebrew inscriptions on a steep, thickly wooded hillside. They were like just on a hike. Canteens, backpacks, jerry cans. And it turned out that the Jewish cemetery, in desperate need of repair, belonged to the temple. They didn't realize it, but they stumbled upon this cemetery. And it was all, you know, grown over, and it needed tremendous repair. So they decided when they came back that the temple's youth group did an initial cleanup in April 2009. But it was clear that a fence was necessary. They needed to, like, fence it off. Maybe there were animals that were coming in. People were looting. They decided they needed a fence that was necessary. The only question was, how are they going to raise the money for this fence? I guess it was rather extensive, and putting it up and raising the money, they didn't know what they were going to do to raise the money. So now, this is unbelievable, because this doesn't happen. And even if it does happen, it doesn't hit the news as regularly as some of the other ugly, ichy, gross, achil Hashem news. It's the news. So there were several residents of the neighboring Satmar community in Kiryas Joel, that was led by a fellow by the name of Zalman Weinstock of Kihilas Oitzer HaChesed. Now imagine, you have Temple Beth Jacob, a Reformed synagogue in Newburgh, and the town from the Sadmach Sidim, Reb Zalman Weinstock of Kehilas Oitzer HaChesed, yeah, they read, this fellow, he reads about the cemetery's need for a fence, and he gets in his car and he drives to Newburgh to meet with Kenneth Packer, chairman of Temple Beth Jacob Cemetery Committee. Now, where the story is like unbelievable, is in and of itself, you have one Jew, a chusid, he reads the story of a guy who's on the Reformed Temple. I don't know. We're conditioned to think that, you know what they do? They roll up that paper, they throw it in the trash. What do I care? Yeah, Reform synagogue. That's not my orientation. I have no need to get involved in that. Like, what? But no, that's not what happened. So what happens? He reaches out to this fellow. A delegation was formed from Kiryas Yoel. They raised the funding within the Satmar community for a gated chain link fence that still allows passersby to see the cemetery, but it protected it. That's unbelievable. Now, this fellow Packer and several men from Kiryas Yoel, they gathered to say Kaddish over the graves and to do more cleanup work and repair the headstones. Imagine they did this together. Many stones are broken and will have to be repaired at great expense. This is what he was quoted as saying in the news, this Packer. He was interviewed for this. But the generosity, but the kindness, and the energy of the residents of Kiryas Yoel have been invaluable to us. They forged ties, new bonds between our two communities. And that's unbelievable. That's really unbelievable. You know, we live in a time, and we live in a world, and we're conditioned, sadly, to look at the people as distinct and not like us. And if you're not like me, you're not good. And certainly in the world of a religious orientation, if your religious orientation is not my religious orientation, feh. But that's not how it's supposed to be. And this is an amazing story of Kiddush Hashem. They forged new ties between our two communities. By the way, that doesn't mean they philosophically, theologically, religiously see anything similar with each other. Believe that. It's good and it's kind and it's just for us to focus on the things that unite us, that bring us together, that there's commonalities, more so than the things that divide us. And this is a very powerful lesson, especially when we think about this important learning that we're learning today, that in the context and in the construct of the peah, shichcha, the leket, the gifts to the poor, why it's reiterated here specifically in the context of the holidays and the karbonos and the offerings of the holidays, is to tell us that you are b'ina beis hamikdash, you are bringing the building of the beis hamikdash because of your understanding that it's a totality for all, says Lubavitcher Rebbe. A very, very powerful insight. And I guess I'll just leave you with this, which is part of what we're supposed to do every single week as we learn the parasha, is to take these lessons, not just in the vernacular, not just in the peripheral, but actually in action items, really take these lessons to heart. What can we do today to reach out to people, all people, within our faith and beyond, to be able to make a Kiddush Hashem, to bring people under the tent of ethics and values of Torah HaKadosha, to build our Beis HaMikdash, which relies on us through our generosity, through our openness, through our kindness, not wavering on our steadfast commitment to the rigors and the rules of the Torah, that we don't do, but with an extended hand, with love, with empathy, with sympathy, with sensitivity, and by realizing that it's all for one and one for all, today, together, we can build the Beis HaMikdash. I thank you all for listening this morning via our Boca Jewish Center Zoom room, Facebook Live, here live, actually live. Thank you so much for your generous sponsorship. Zechus and merit for your dear brother, and a zechus for your entire family. I wish everybody a wonderful Thursday, a happy Lag BaOmer, and a beautiful Shabbos Kodesh Parshas Emor. Have a beautiful day, everybody.